The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Something that I think our guests here had not anticipated we'd be talking about is the resignation of Barry Walsh from the Executive Council of Fine Gael. Indeed, a sort of bemusement, I think, among some people as to who Barry Walsh is. Let me introduce our panel. It's the novelist and journalist Amanda Brunker. We also have Kate Brennan-Harding, producer of Evening Time Programming here on Today FM, and Breda Brown, PR Director of Unique Media. And of course, Breda, you know the political scene well. Just tell us about this resignation statement that has been issued by Fine Gael. Executive Council Chairman Gerry O'Connell put this out on behalf of Barry Walsh this afternoon.
So basically Barry Walsh has literally just resigned from the Fine Gael Executive Council on the basis of accusations that some of his activity online and on social media has been highly inappropriate over the past couple of weeks, couple of months. Kate O'Connell came out with this yesterday. Actually, she's the one who sort of brought it to the attention of the party.
Yeah, the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party meeting on Wednesday night, and she had sheafs of old tweets from a printout of the things that he had done.
Exactly. So the resignation has, as I said, just been handed in. So it's actually quite lengthy. It's about five, six paragraphs. There's quite a bit in it. But he apologises for the tone and the language that he used in some of his tweets. He realises that some of his remarks have caused serious offence to many people, and I apologise unreservedly for that. He does say, however, which is quite interesting, he does so in the hope that it may bring an end to the trial by media which has occurred in the last 48 hours and placed intolerable pressure on my family and friends. Now, where do we start with that? I mean, firstly, he should have thought before he posted in terms of the language and the content.
And I should say, and this is something that we did on The Tonight Show on TV3 at length last night, and we read many of its previous tweets in which a whole series of women he described as bitch. That seemed to be his favourite term of abuse for any female political opponent with whom he disagreed.
Delightful.
Amanda, yeah.
You know, like, how can you not take offence to this? And the fact that he's there saying, he's almost kind of going, I'm very sorry. But it was like going, you're only sorry because you've lost your job over it. You're not sorry for the views that you've held, because it's not just the last couple of months he's been tweeting this absolute bile. He's been tweeting this for about 2 years now. And he's been making personal attacks on people, including Tara Flynn. And, you know, that has to be upsetting, no matter how kind of thick-skinned you think you are.
And I better explain, he made a comment about Tara Flynn because she has spoken about her own abortion previously. He says in his statement, "I've always enjoyed robust political debate. However, I accept that with many of these tweets, I took the political jousting a step too far."
And, you know, what I'm slightly, annoyed about at this point is the amount of apologies we've been getting recently that are qualified apologies.
Yeah.
Nobody is apologising for what they did. You know, even in the language that he's using here, he's saying he deeply regrets the tone and the language. He's not regretting,
he's not regretting the sentiment of what he actually said.
And he's also saying here as well that he accepts that with many of the tweets, he took the political jousting a step too far. Now, in the position he's in, he should be in a scenario where he needs to be thinking about the language he uses. He needs to be thinking about the tone he uses. More to the point, he needs to be thinking about his thought process.
If this has been going on for 2 years, sorry now, because I'm not completely familiar with the entire story. But if this has been going on for 2 years, then surely why didn't anybody in the party stop him already? Why wasn't he called on it already?
Fair play to
Kate O'Connell for calling him out. Mm. I mean, I know how hard it is to come out around different things, but why had nobody called him out or said, had a word saying stop? That is not appropriate, and you're representing the Fine Gael.
Well, I suppose some people might say it's freedom of speech. No matter how much we dislike what he was saying, we have to respect the freedom of people to express their views, no matter how much we dislike
Completely, and I do agree with that. But the other thing is that if he's got freedom of speech and he's saying trial by media, well, he committed these everything
guilty
on media, so, you know, he sort of hung himself. Really.
Exactly, and he is saying that he wants to bring an end to this trial by media. He's now turning the tables and blaming the media for bringing all this to our attention, when in fact he's been doing it himself on these publicly available platforms for this length of time.
He sounds like a big Trump fan. Blame the media.
Well, actually, he actually has tweeted in support of Donald Trump on various issues.
Of course he has.
Well, let's keep to this theme, because this is something we were going to discuss a little bit later, but we might as well do it now. Kate Brennan-Harding, tell us please about the suspension in England of the editor of the Gay Times.
He's actually been fired.
Oh, has he?
Yes, he has. Okay. In the last 16 hours or something like that, over last night. Basically, Josh Rivers, he had just assumed the role of editor with the magazine Gay Times. What happened was he was about to be interviewed by BuzzFeed, and they had done some research on him and found an awful lot of tweets that were really grossly offensive. They were anti-Semitic, they were anti-female, they were basically really kind of gross ones about homeless people too. So they found all these tweets, and given that he's the editor of...
Sorry, he'd actually attacked gay people in tweets.
He was attacking everybody and being, you know, the tweets sound... Like, I mean, there's bitchy and then there's, it's just really, really, really
And in
crude.
Particular, Asian gay men for some reason and transgender people.
Yeah.
And this goes back to 2010. Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, but now he's just kind of trying to say that, oh, you know, I had a bad phase and I was drinking a bit too much. But it's just like going, where does the madness stop?
But hold on a second. Why then did he want the job as editor of Gay Times and how did he get it?
It doesn't. It actually doesn't make sense. And as you said, we're going back now to a statement, which is an apology. And can I say, like everything at the moment, it's a qualified apology. And what he's saying is that at the time, which was around 2010, 2011, he faced issues that prevented me from treating people with the respect and kindness I value so dearly now. So he's apologising, I suppose, in a way for his behaviour back then. But this, it's just...
But it's just like, do they not do a Google search on this guy? You know the way anybody who's going for a job now, people tend to just kind of stick their name in and kind of say
exactly. They do. The only thing is, I was saying this outside and I wasn't sure whether I was going to say it on air because I'm trying to figure out my own personal feelings on it. I do... Like, okay, we're talking about stuff and it's trial by media and we're talking about people who have really let themselves down on Twitter or on social media machines. We're talking about somebody who was working for Gay Times, which is incredibly inclusive and obviously fought for the minorities for over 33 years. But in reading his, I totally agree with you about the qualified apologies. But he does also say, he says he experienced deep self-loathing in his past. I myself have done and said things, not online I hope, but done on said things maybe 5-6 years ago. I have transformed my life. Now, I'm not saying I was racist or anything like that or saying things that were horrible, but I do think that there has to come a point where we stop absolutely pinning people to the wall and give them an opportunity to hold their hands up completely and express honestly that they made a mistake and to let them get past this. Because at the moment, I think we're throwing everyone at the wall and we're not allowing anybody hold their hands up and giving them, like, where is the incentive for somebody to actually apologise instead of hiding
from it? Okay, I get that. But, like, I mean, that's just a bit like, oh, sure, he just raped somebody, sure. He's a grand fella now.
But it's
you
not
know,
because...
He had drink on him, sure. But it's like, oh, I don't go around murdering people, raping people because I've got drink on me.
Of course, and I agree. But they're very, very...
But that's a different thing. That's something that the criminal justice system would deal with. These are things that people say and opinions that they have and
express. But these are very offensive opinions. They're not just kind of like, I don't like the music of U2 or, you know, just kind of vague opinions. These are very... damaging opinions to hold.
But remember as well, I suppose, before social media, and there are certain people of a certain age around this table who may remember that, where, you know, you go out and you're with your friends and you have those conversations and you may say those things in sort of enclosed groups as such.
No. Well,
I don't. Maybe you do. Maybe
I don't. I never held opinions like that. Yeah, I think
maybe,
gross.
Maybe not in the negative. Company of people who have.
Of course
how,
I have.
And how have you reacted to it?
Well, you see, me being me, I always speak up and I end up causing arguments.
Me too.
Because I'm just like, oh, that's not cool.
But basically, things happened in an enclosed environment before, or in your head, shall we say, right? I'm talking about other individuals, obviously not myself. Now we have social media where people feel that they can put everything, what's in their head or another conversation, out into the public domain.
No filter.
No filter. And sometimes I wonder, do they actually realise that, you know, their reputation is no longer about just sort of personal interactions with people you meet on the street. It's now people have a view of you as a result of what they read online.
Well, you can do that once or twice, but when this is ongoing and continued hate, this is Katie Hopkins territory. You know, is she going to turn around now in a couple of years and go, listen, I'm really sorry, I actually am fine with people who are overweight, people who are from different countries and la la la. Don't hate me. It was all just an act.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm certainly not legitimising or validating anything of what he said. I do think, I completely take on what you're saying, but I do think it's really, really important to not take away from the seriousness of rape or sexual abuse because it dilutes it down.
Absolutely.
And I would be concerned about that and conflating the two. But I also think that there has to be an element of, with some people, if they just hold their hands up completely, that they should be able
but
to rebuild.
But should there not be
rebuild.
Transparency beforehand? Should he have gone, you know what, I was a bit of a
maybe should we be ignoring certain things? Or let's just take the example of Karl Lagerfeld, who is the creative director of Chanel and Fendi. He has a history of making tactless and offensive comments. But tell us, Kate, about the things he has said recently about Angela Merkel.
Okay, well, Karl Lagerfeld, he basically said, I know some, he was on a French television programme the other day, and he basically said, one cannot, even if there are decades between them, kill millions of Jews so you can bring millions of their worst enemies in their place. He cited an anecdote in support of his assumptions that Jewish people and refugees are at odds. He also said, which, you know, he's just, this is hearsay, he said, I know someone in Germany who took a young Syrian and after 4 days said the greatest thing Germany invented was the Holocaust. So like, he's a man who just lets everything... I mean, I know we're talking about... It's all similar topics, but this man has never been held to account by the huge fashion houses that he represents.
And because of the position of power that he's in, he has been able to say these things and not necessarily be held to account as such. But Matt, to go back to what you said, filter. No filter. This is the problem, you know, that, I'm not saying that back in the day there was a filter, but people just... Is it a case that people feel everything is free speech these days?
Well,
that
I think
you just
for
open
him,
your mouth and for say
him it's
whatever
marketing.
You want.
For him, well, it is marketing,
and you wonder if it is a gimmick and a bit to attract
for me,
media attention.
I think that because I mean his comments on Adele a number of years ago, where he said, you know, he called her she was a bit too fat,
and then he retracted it to she's a bit roundish,
and then you know obviously he made cast aspersions on Meryl Streep, stating that you know she paid for her dress or she was paid to wear a dress to an award ceremony instead of wearing a Chanel, they're all just sensational.
And gave a qualified apology as well at that time because he said basically he'd misunderstood what went on.
Yeah. Okay, the listener says, can we have one day without Trump mentioned on the show? He was only mentioned on Tuesday. He wasn't mentioned Monday. He wasn't mentioned Wednesday or yesterday. And this is an interesting story. It's a story about, well, who's going to tell me about this? Breedy, can you tell me about his ban on the import of elephant trophies?
Yeah, so basically Obama in 2014 banned the import of what they're calling elephant trophies from Zimbabwe. Now, I'm assuming they're talking about ivory tusks and other, well, what else would there be?
Heads.
I mean, can you actually bring a head over?
I'd say so. Yeah, heads, okay. Tails, hoofs. They'll take over whatever part that they can then display.
Oh, display, they're mounted, they get put on wall
monitors. So like in deer heads, do you know that exact same thing?
So anyway, Obama banned this in 2014, but now the Trump administration has lifted the ban. So it means then you can now import them.
Amanda, you look shocked again.
I'm enraged. I have to say my pet hate is Donald Trump, just in life in general. And Twitter would have died off years ago if it hadn't been for Trump. He just revived Twitter, and that is my joy. Getting angry at him. But it's just kind of like going, how was there only a ban introduced in 2014? Yeah. I can't get over that. It was,
well, the thing is because the National Rifle Association and the Safari Club had always been paying, well,
I know, they're so powerful.
Various people to sort of keep this happening. And the change in law was announced because the Safari Club actually took a lawsuit challenging it. And that's why the change has come into place
but
now.
But as we all know, Trump's two sons adore trophy hunting. Like, I mean, So all you have to do is go on Twitter or Google or whatever.
They're social media again.
They're social media again. Exactly. Trial by social media. But they're there with the photographs of elephants, with buffalo, with cheetahs.
It's incredibly upsetting.
It's just vile. And they're those people who kind of prop the animal up. I think there's also a huge big giraffe, which they have kind of positioned around to look pretty. And the rifle beside him, he's sitting there with the thumbs up.
Yeah, do you know what the most ridiculous part of this is? That the administration, they said that, they argued that it can actually boost conservation efforts.
No.
And they said the US Fish and Wildlife Service determined that the hunting and management programs for African elephants will enhance the survival of the species in the wild.
Maybe you're just animal snowflakes.
But is that a thing?
That's
a
new one. I just called it that.
Animal snowflakes.
And Trump has said he's not interested in big game hunting, but his sons love it. So you'd hardly think maybe he's doing it just for the sake
it's
of the
attention seeking to get their dad's attention.
Also, though, it is, I think it's a case of, you know, again, he's trying to overturn nearly everything that Obama did.
He literally
in Obama's administration.
He must have a list of things that Obama did, and it was like, let's just mess
well,
this up.
Well, especially as it's the National Gun Rifle Association. Do you know what I mean? He wants to keep them sweet. He's pleasing them.
And they've
them.
Applauded
it's
the decision.
All the things that he's
okay,
sweet.
I'm almost afraid to bring up the word outrage again, but who was outraged by the calls for a boycott against the sausage roll maker Greggs over its nativity ad?
I wasn't.
Okay, Brendan Hardy. Okay, well, let's just explain, because I actually can understand,
I can understand
why some people would have been very upset by this.
I can,
and
yeah.
feel that it was entirely inappropriate. So just explain okay. to people what happened.
I wasn't outraged, but I can understand why people would be upset. So basically, Greg's Bakery have an advent calendar, which they're launching next
week.
This
is over in the UK, so it doesn't really affect us at all.
Well, it makes me a bit hungry. But anyway, so in which one image, the 24th of December image, you know, the window when you pull the advent calendar, it depicts the manger and the nativity scene, except for where Jesus is in the manger is actually a sausage roll. And basically it's been called out, the UK Evangelical Alliance strongly criticised the baker, saying it was a gimmick that seemed to be about manufacturing a scandal to sell baked goods.
Which it was.
Yeah.
And it was done in a light
gimmick.
It was light hearted, but the thing is, can I remember
is that
who it
not
is?
Offensive to many Catholics?
Absolutely, but my point was about to be, I don't know who it was, I don't have notes here in front of me, but somebody called it out saying this wouldn't be done for any other religion because there would be outrage.
And
because
indeed, a listener says, put it this way, would it be funny to put a sausage roll on a cross?
Absolutely. Mm. Well, yes.
No, that would be regarded as offensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, again, we'll talk about the apologies again. That's all we've been talking about today. What Greg said was, we're really sorry to have caused any offence. This was never our intention.
But we're not going to pull it, and we're still going to sell the calendar.
Yeah. The calendar's £24.
Yeah.
Who's going to pay £24 for a calendar from a butcher's? It's kind of like going, really?
Well, now, in most cases, it's got a £5 gift card behind the door.
Well, let's
Christmas
move on to something that's not outrageous. So Delia Smith says the cookbook is dead. Oh, just
this is outrageous. This is outrageous.
This is outrageous. Sell enormously.
Yes, they do.
Apart from my cookbook, didn't sell at all.
You had a cookbook?
I had a Christmas cookbook back in 2010, 2011, and it was the year of the really big snow. And because it was a Christmas cookbook, you know, it's kind of specialised. You kind of need to sell
it. Nobody could get out to get the ingredients.
Nobody could get out to buy the book. Never mind the ingredients to cook and it was just a total flop.
Yeah, you're not a chef, though, Amanda. Maybe that might have been the issue.
Matt, can I just say, I got 5 stars in the restaurant.
Oh, you did?
I did.
And also, there's a lot of people that have chefs out.
I've never
A lot of people who have books out that are cookbooks that are not chefs either.
True. But I think, you know, if you look at the non-fiction bestseller list every week, there is always, here or in the UK or elsewhere, there's always at least one cookbook, if not two, in there. And you see, over here, you've got the likes of Nevin Maguire, you've got Rachel Allen. They sell in their droves. The UK, you've got Jamie. And because they reinvent themselves all the time, I think Delia Smith, to be honest, has been left a little bit behind. She hasn't reinvented herself.
She hasn't reinvented at all, yeah.
Jamie's doing his 5-minute dinners or his 10-minute meals.
Well, one of her last books was all about how to boil an egg.
I know.
So it's like, about running out of fresh ideas.
I don't think she's wrong, number one, because number one, sticky fingers. When you're making food, you don't want to be touching your computer or your laptop with sticky fingers. And I don't know about you, but I don't automatically retain the entire recipe in one go. Do you know what I mean?
People just love. I queued up there last week to meet Nigella Lawson.
I know,
who
I love her.
A total anticlimax.
Really?
I was so disappointed. She clearly doesn't like anybody in her space, in her zone. She would not do proper photographs. Somebody took my phone off me and took a photograph of the side of my head. I was distraught. I bought 3 cookbooks and I got a fat photo of the side of me, and even Nigella looked awful. It was like, going, seriously?
So she was screening the photographs you were taking.
No, her people, but we were. I'm closer to Matt now than what I was to Nigella, and I queued up for an hour.
Thank you very much, Amanda Brunker, Breeder Brown, and Kate Brennan Harding for your contributions today. We look forward to seeing you again here on The Last Word on Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.